This talk is about the Pride movement, the LGBTQ movement, and why we spend so much time with it at our network and at this conference is not because we like to talk about it all the time. There are more important issues to talk about, the gospel and how we convey the kingdom of God in our society. But this is the area that has become the center of debate, or the symptom of the secular individualistic movement. I've been studying that, how that grew in Swedish history during the 20th century. And Sweden is particular in secular individualism. And I guess most of you have seen this cultural map of the world, where we group the different nations of the world. I tend to use this picture as the opening of almost every topic that I talk about, because it's so telling about both how the very traditional nations down left, the further down you go, the more traditional religious values you have, the more up you go, the more secular the values. And on the, I'm not a mathematician, that's the X scale, right? Yeah. So the more left-wing, the more group-oriented values you have, and the more right-wing, the more individualistic, the more self-expression values you have. There we find our nations, a lot of us come from Protestant Europe nations. The English-speaking nations are also close to that culturally. But the Protestant Europe nations tend to be the most secular and the most individualistic, which sounds paradoxical, because Luther had a vision of Christ alone and Scripture alone and so on. But that seems to be some kind of feature in Protestantism that may lead to an over-exaggeration of the individual. And as you see in this corner, we have the most extreme nation on earth, which happens to be Sweden, which happens to be the one that I live in. So there is a job to do for me, but there is also a job for you to do. We're all in the same cultural milieu, so to speak, and we all have the same values and the same things to handle. But they also all belong to the same philosophical idea. And what I do in my doctoral work and in the book coming with it in Sweden is to show how, or investigate the autonomy of the individual and how that is portrayed in the political processes in Swedish 20th century history. And it appears that in this secular individualistic project, autonomy tends to be the highest of all virtues. And that is why issues of sexuality and gender comes such to the forefront of debate, because that seems to be the most prominent proof of showing that you are liberated, you are independent, you are autonomous from all boundaries. We didn't pick the battlefield, but the culture did. So we have to play the game where it is, and it is here. And autonomous values tends to be in opposition to three values, and they're all connected somehow to what we discuss here. First, it often rebels against community in all forms, because community can keep people imprisoned and not be free enough to act out their autonomous lives. And the most important, the most central community is obviously the family of man, woman, and children. So that's why a lot of the opposition is directed against community and against the family. And the other is against authority. As such, authority can be rulers, can be legislation, can be norms, can be tradition, and even down to, as we heard in the last talk, against nature, because nature may keep the individual trapped. You are not only your body may trap you from your individuality. So all kinds of authorities are opposed in the autonomous philosophy. And finally, this opposition also appears very, very often to be directed against the sacred, against God, against Scripture, against church tradition, or other religions for that matter, but we are in a Christian environment. So that's why the opposition, the autonomous opposition, you all experience it, happens to be directed very often against Christian traditions, Christian scriptures. As we discussed during the break, it's very rarely that the autonomous project or that the Pride movement directs criticism against Islam, which is much, much more authoritarian than Christian tradition. But there are identity political difficulties to make these, well, groups. You don't oppose one group at a time. It's very difficult and complex, these systems. But it also shows that this philosophy may be somewhat self-contradictory. And that's how we could understand it and also analyze it. So in this Pride movement, or the LGBTQ movement, it does promote autonomy, and it does seem to rebel against the three others whenever it appears in our culture. So I'm going to begin now with saying something about sexual ethics. The report that I'm going to present is not about sexual ethics, because it's very difficult in the public square to have an open discussion about sexual ethics. We passed that stage somewhere in the 1960s. But just to present the different alternatives is quite useful for us as Christians, anyway, and to interpret what is the debate going on in society and also in church. There are basically four views on sexuality. The first one is that everything is permitted, and that means everything, and that includes sadism from Marquis de Sade. And the other, more usual, obviously, is that everything is permitted as long as no one gets hurt. You hear that in discussion quite often. And that's what we call hedonism. The pleasure is at the center of everything. The third one is that, well, we can't allow everything because that would complicate things with incestuous relationships and so on, which we don't like. But quite many things should be permitted, most notably homosexuality, which is the general liberal view that has been propagated in our world, part of the world, for the last couple of decades. Or the conservative Christian biblical view, which it says that sex is restricted to a lifelong exclusive covenant between one man, who is a man, and one woman, who is a woman. So these are basically the four different positions. But there is a Swedish professor of philosophy called Torbjörn Tännsjö who has made this presentation and discussed with themselves, which one should you find reasonable? And he himself is a prominent atheist. I debated him once on the issue of euthanasia. Very difficult debate, very hostile environment. I'm glad you seem more friendly here today. But I kept to my arguments, and I kept warm in the debate I saw when I came home, and my wife told me that was the impression when she saw the debate on YouTube, but I felt completely devastated afterwards. But you can do that in a hostile environment. But he says that, okay, I don't like number one. It's not good that people hurt each other. I like number two because that goes with my utilitarian philosophy. I don't like number four, but I find it reasonable. I don't like number three because that's counterintuitive, that's counter-philosophical. It doesn't make sense. Either you accept everything in a utilitarian way because it increases pleasure, or you say no to everything but the traditional Christian view of marriage. But one would probably say that number one or A would not be accepted by anyone. But as we shall see, it is actually somewhat endorsed by the Pride movement. And I'll give you some examples of it. Number two is obviously accepted then by utilitarianism, who says that pleasure is the goal of all things. And C would be accepted by this. Some would call it secular, some would call it progressive, some would call it liberal. The term is not the most important. But it's too rarely reflected. Why do I think this way? Do I think this way because the popular culture tells me to, or have I actually thought through what I am for and what I am against? And D is obviously accepted by traditional Christianity, but also, I would say, by natural law, as has been communicated over centuries and over millennia, and also, obviously, by other religions. Even though we and others who hold this view are under considerable pressure. But people have been under pressure for other things during the centuries. And some have prevailed and some have caved in. But if you have a position that you find sound, it's obviously good to prevail, even though the environment may be hostile, and because you find it a good, valid position, not just for you, but for humanity. So what we did in our think tank is that we conducted a study of the Pride Festival in Stockholm. And obviously, that's not a topic that you would gladly go into and say that we like to do controversial topics that everyone would hate us for. But the beginning of it, actually, you see my surname down there by the titles. The inspiration to this report actually came from my wife. We had done one previous report at the Clapham Institute, and it was about euthanasia, and it was very clearly describing the negative sides to euthanasia in other nations and so on. Not really controversial, because we have a good legislation in Sweden and the doctors agree on it. But here, we were very much in opposition. And the background to it was that she was with we have four children, but she went with two of them to a morning show that Swedish television make in Malmö in southern Sweden. And when they went out from the train, she realized that, oh, they have had a Pride festival here this week. And there were balloons and rainbow stuff all over the place. And there were brochures and pamphlets lying everywhere. And she picked one of them up and she realized that, wow, this has been actually been published and signed by Swedish public authorities. And the question is, the content, is this good for society? Is this actually what these authorities endorse and work for in all their regular work in society? Or are there negative aspects of this, which we feel intuitively when we look at it from outside as Christians, because they propagate another vision and another philosophy. But the information that we get from society is that what is Pride about? It's about love. It's about openness. It's about, we have a slogan in Sweden, which has been sort of the secular creed of Sweden, which is all people's equal value. I don't know if you have something similar in your nations. This entered the Social Democratic Party program in 1960, and I could talk ages about that process. But it's basically a political value. It sounds good, but of course it all depends on what you put into the value. But we get the impression that the Pride Festival is about only good things. So I asked my board, do we really want to go into this? Because I just brought the vision from my wife saying that we should really study this. And she'd been reading some material in international press. There was a British magazine primarily who really touched her heart, which was about the environment where young homosexual men meet and take drugs and engage in all sorts of things together. And it was just so filled with pain and with sorrow and with captivity. She felt for these young people. And I brought this to the board and they said, okay, it's a controversial topic, but it needs to be investigated. Nobody's done that before. And if we don't do it, probably no one would. So we decided to do that. So we had my wife, she's a counselor. She's been here she's not been here on site at the ELF, but she's been part of it through the web. Now she's at home with the children. And we have also one psychiatry doctor and one who's a doctor of counseling who did this together and compared the content of the program with, science and how we look upon the needs of people in society and other documents that society writes. What creates a good society? How should we care for people and how should we combat mental illness and so on and so on. So I helped out with doing the actual research study of the program because I had time available at that time. I don't know how I had, but I did. I found some time and it was not fun at all, because I wasn't really prepared for the content. I was prepared to find rainbow flags and talked about love. I investigated all the program points and searched for words, what was the content of the program under different categories. And every now and then I just had to shut down the computer and go out and cry for a while because it was so terribly dark. And I wasn't really emotionally prepared for that. So what we found and compared to other documents in society, how we are to promote public health, was that, this is what we did. We studied the program of Stockholm Pride and its implications for public health. And we found that it was manifestly not about human dignity and equality. I did one search particularly for human dignity, människovärde in Swedish, and that's why we picked this picture, this search result, as the cover, because it said, no program points found, try another search phrase. And I found that really, really telling. It was not about those topics that politicians enter the Pride Parade saying that, hooray, we like people's equal value and we like equality and so on, and openness. It was not about these topics. It was, to a small extent, that there are hundreds of points in the program, different kinds of arrangements, large or small. They are, to a small extent, about love. Although in those cases, these were generally by external sponsors who wanted to be in this rainbow light and shine in the light and say that we are a good company, come to us, we are woke and so on. But in the cases that the arrangers mentioned love as a word, it was almost in the autonomous version, not in an agape version, not in a Christian version of living together with someone and loving them for themselves, but loving in an autonomous version, talking about myself. It was, however, very largely about sex, but then also in descriptions that I won't mention here. But the common denominator was that it was surrounded by Q, not the LGB or the T, but very much in the Q, and describing how the opposition to all kinds of norms in sexuality is the focus of the program points and the seminars and so on. We also made a word search for, because I realized that there are a terrible amount of seminars and arrangements about darkness, centered around darkness. So we did a similar search for words connected to light, and there were no connected to the joy that you hear in popular media. Pride is about joy. Everybody's supposed to come and be joyful together. But the content was not about joy, not about light, but the opposite. There were several going into the darkness, coming to the darkness. And this is a clear pattern. This is not me making up stories, but as it is such a large program, the picture becomes clear and it doesn't become beautiful. When they present things that are generally viewed as positive in society, if we say that relations is good in society, commitment is positive for a society, it makes a society hold together, different kinds of norms, responsibility, and so on, we realize that these are typically presented in a negative light, because these tend to keep the individual imprisoned. It can do. And that's not good. And we need to break free from everything in the autonomous project. And Pride is a mirror of the autonomous project, very, very clearly. And that surprised also that they didn't present things that we actually think are good for a good society in a positive light, but rather in a negative light because of the philosophy behind it. And they do present positive views on anarchy and egoism, which sounds very, very strange. But there are several seminars about relationship anarchy. How do you live it? And so on. And the content doesn't show, the information for the seminars doesn't show that, well, we don't think anarchy is a good thing, but we need to handle this or that. But the basic presentation is that anarchy and egoism is something good because it breaks you free from these bonds that you need to liberate yourself from. And what was the most disturbing, I think we're on that point here, is that those things that pose risks for public health, those things that are really dangerous and very much criticized in all other areas in society, were promoted in a positive light in the Pride program. So, for instance, prostitution, and that's one of the most things that are very difficult to understand. The whole of Sweden stand behind the sex, what do you call it, sex purchase law, that is forbidden to buy sex in Sweden. But Pride promotes prostitution. They don't use the word prostitution, they use the word sex work instead. But they promote it and say, in an open society, everything should be permitted and prostitution should be permitted. So there is really a very strange match of values here in public debate, where you can't debate Pride because you can't debate the actual content, because that goes against what we agree on in Sweden. It does endorse drugs, as the example that I gave, which is called chemsex, and it's just a terrible world, tearing people's lives apart and destroying people. But it is promoted and showing that, okay, we do this, but how can we practice it as safely as possible, and so on. And things like pain, the BDSM world, is also promoted as something that you could go into. It's not criticized, but it's openly practiced and used, and saying, how should you, for instance, inflict pain in your body by putting needles through your skin and doing all things towards each other that I can't say here. But it's something that you just have to go outside and cry for a while, because it's so dark to people and hurtful to people. And the same goes with different kinds of self-harm. Society and the care is supposed to counter and to battle self-harm in all other parts of society, but here it is endorsed. And the dominance and so on. So it's a very dark place, and they don't hide it. Everything was open in the program for everyone to search, but nobody had drawn it out into the open to discuss, is this actually what we stand for and what we would like to endorse in society? And when one should ask these questions to politicians, and we tried to invite politicians, we tried to invite the two major organizations who work for LGBTQ issues in Sweden, and we tried to invite the arrangers of Stockholm Pride to the seminar, saying that this is what we have presented about your own program. Please come and defend it if you like to. But none of them came. And people were so terribly scared to come to this seminar and sort of take part in the debate, because you all know how risky it is to take part in this discussion, because you get all kinds of labels on yourself, which ordinary people don't like to have. There was one brave newspaper columnist from a secular newspaper who came and gave a good, solid criticism of Pride, and also some discussion of what she thought could have been better done in the report and so on, but very good of her to come. But no politician, no social worker would affirm or accept this in any other area of society. But as it hides under the rainbow banner, it is not openly discussed, it is not openly criticized. And this was important for Sweden to do, for us. Of course, I took some criticism because I took part in the debate, even though I didn't participate in writing the report, and some others did as well. But you can live through things. That's okay. And I come back to some practical advice on to handle these types of debates later. So there are progressives in both politics, and as we heard last session, in church, who affirm this, because it's propagated under a very nice looking banner. And we have, for instance, the last prime minister in Sweden and the present prime minister in Sweden, who gladly go in this parade because they have a nice flag with six colors on it. If they would have been completely open, they would have a rainbow with seven colors of it. but a seventh of the population is not included. And obviously, number six is the number of man in the biblical understanding, and number seven is the number of God. So that says something about the signs that people want to show through the symbol. But every politician would want to be in the joy and the happiness and the openness of this parade, and without taking in consideration what it actually consists of. So in church, just a little picture here that I found in a Christian newspaper in Sweden the other month, where one debater says that the LGBTQ question shows that the church must be secular. And that's pretty clearly conveyed. These are competing worldviews. Because I would like to send some good advice that I would set value on myself and others as well, and hopefully you as well, because we are all in the same boat, so to speak. The Swedish boat has traveled a bit further, but your boats may be traveling in the same direction. And we may feel that we are like the little David countering the large Goliath. As you've mentioned in your input, that this is a large movement and they're really, really strong. They began as an underground movement, but gradually they became more and more powerful and less tolerant. So some advice when in fear of attacks is that when labels are thrown at you, which they may occasionally be, you can ignore them, which is difficult, but you need to do that to preserve yourself, or expose them and defeat them if necessary. But you can't be defeated by the labels. As I mentioned very briefly yesterday evening, I was in a situation once when I was thrown down, not for anything I said or done, but just for giving the feeling that I was provocatively Christian. And that's something that we can experience in our lives, but we have to live through that and understand that labels have been thrown against people at all times. And when they spat on William Booth, you remember, he considered it a medal. And when you are attacked, yeah, it will be painful. I can tell you from personal experience, but you will survive. We can keep close to the heart, to the Lord, in our hearts and to his heart. And he has been through a lot worse than we'll ever experience. And he will show a way and he will provide you with the strength and the growth that we need as people. And one personal experience then from this event. We did invite, as I said, the organizers and the lobby organizations to the release seminar where we discussed the report, but none of them came. But when we were in Stockholm and had that seminar, the public Swedish radio contacted us and said that we would like to make a debate, a radio debate, with some of the authors and the chairman of Stockholm Pride, who did not accept to come to the seminar, but had actually said yes to come to a public debate on national radio. So I asked all the three authors who were present there, and none of them wanted to have a radio debate, and that's perfectly okay. Not everybody is a debate person. So I said that, okay, I can take it then as the editor of the report. And that was one of the most surprising, that's the word, experience that I've had in my life. I came here to outside and took a photo of myself showing that I'm on national radio here, please listen in a while. And then I came into the guard and at the same time came the female chairman of the Pride movement. I hadn't seen her before, so I didn't know what she looked like. So we came at the same time and the guard showed us in and put us in the waiting room outside the studio. And then we sat there, the two of us, 20 minutes together. And that could have felt like a really difficult, a really awkward situation. But then the very strange thing happened in the room. That I felt the love of Christ coming over for me, for her as a person. Not for the ideology, not for her being Goliath or representing Goliath, but because I saw in her appearance that she felt quite insecure because she had never been on the accused bench before. She had always been the accusing of others, saying, don't be so intolerant, and so on. So I managed to get a real good conversation with her as a human being. And I got the possibility to explain what is our vision behind the Clapham Institute? What was the vision behind the original Clapham Group in London? To liberate those that are in slavery. And I saw also that she had a Star of David around her neck. And I could tell how warmly I felt for the Jewish people and so on. So we had a real good conversation, like ordinary people, even though we represented very much differing ideologies and visions for society. And then we got into the studio, and it turned, I haven't listened to it afterwards deliberately, but I remember the feeling that for once the host asked the critical questions to her. Why is that you support prostitution? Why is it that you propagate using of drugs? And she tried to answer in a way. And I did not get the attacks that we usually get because maybe that I had had the chance to connect to her as a human being. It was a surprising experience. That's the best word I can use for it. And then we got out, and as I said, I or somebody else could come to the Pride Conference and have this kind of discussion there as well, if you invite us, but they never did. And then a few months later, she resigned as chairman, and I have no idea why, but she did. It was a very surprising experience, but telling perhaps of what it is to be a human person. Then some advice then on how to handle or battle the autonomous ideology which is behind this movement that actually hurts people. I don't know if there is a fire extinguisher outside. Possibly there is. I haven't carried one inside anyway. But if you have a fire extinguisher, how do you use it? It says so on the picture, on the text. You aim at the base of the fire, which means that you don't waste all your energy and your extinguishing power to the flames that you see and all the things that you see and you may be angry against or find troubling. But spend the energy on the ideological center or the base of this movement, which is the autonomous ideology, putting the individual at the center of everything. And when you hear sort of wrong tunes in society, and I'll give you an example, destructive tunes in society, expose them, but also make sure to sing the right ones. And I'm going to show you an example here from an English group that you may be familiar with. I took the wrong road that led to the wrong tendencies. I was in the wrong place and the wrong time for the wrong reason and the wrong rhyme. You familiar with it? Depeche Mode, yeah. So you see the key word in this song, it's very clear, and the title of the song. I was on the wrong page of the wrong book with the wrong rendition of the wrong hook, made the wrong move every wrong night. And here comes the key phrase now. With the wrong tune played till it sounded right. And that's, I think, what we experience as society. People sing the same tune over and over and over again until people get the feelings that this is a good tune, until it feels and sounds right. And that may disturb our thinking as Christians and as society. So therefore, my advice is to not only focus on the wrong tunes or the bad examples that we experience in society or the destructive examples that I have mentioned. Instead, our task and our mission is to live and communicate good examples of marriage. What can a good marriage be, which is not captive, but is invigorating and life-giving and so on, that a good marriage can be? It can be full with commitment and obviously of the love of God. The love from God to us, the love back from us to God, and the love of each other that Jesus and Scripture tells us to do. So some final examples then. We have a moral intuition, and people have a moral intuition, and it is to be trusted, especially when we have been discussing last session the trans ideology, where people intuitively feel that it's not good to cut off central organs from fully healthy people. Trust a biblical anthropology, that is the biblical view of man and woman, And it's the Bible's description of what a relationship is, what marriage is, and what gender is. This is a valid description of anthropology and of relationships, and we should continue to communicate it, even though the popular culture may go either direction, back and forth in different ways, alternative ways. And the children. One woman mentioned in the break that children are occasionally drawn into these parades and show that this is where you're going to be, you wave your flags and you're happy, and they are drawn into a philosophy that may be deeply, deeply harmful to them. And that's what happened in the trans ideology. Young people who are very, very young, and I see that. I have four children. What pressure they are under. It's enormous what they experience in school and by popular society and by social media. But children need to be children, and children need to be defended to be children for as long as they want to be children, and the law actually protects them to be children. And if you connect to truth, truth is our friend, reality is our friend, it's not our enemy. Conscience is our friend. What people feel in their heart and their conscience that we need to preserve and protect, these are our best friends. And I think, and I have good reason to think, that the tide will turn. The pendulum, when it swings so far into one extreme end, gravity has a natural tendency to pull it back. And that's actually what we've seen in Sweden the last year. We've discussed in other nations how the pendulum is swinging further and further away from a biblical perspective. But in Sweden, and I don't know how much we have contributed in that, I know that Swedish National Television has contributed a lot. They have shown two programs called The Trans Train, who have shown the terrible consequences of the gender reassignment surgery and hormonal treatment, and how it has injured especially young girls. And I think this has had a huge impact on politicians and on public authorities in Sweden. So look what happened in Sweden the last year. Karolinska Institute, which is a very powerful institute in Sweden. They are the ones who elect the person to the Nobel Prize in Physiology. They decided last year to end all use of puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones for minors outside of clinical studies. Why do they do this? There is medical harm and uncertain benefits result in a major policy shift. This happened in Sweden the last year, and if reality is reality, which it is, this understanding will appear in other nations as well, because nations can't continue to injure their own citizens. And a few months ago, the National Board of Health and Welfare is reversing the trans care of young people. Why are they doing this? They're doing a complete U-turn regarding hormone treatments for minors with gender dysphoria. Why so? Because the risks outweigh the benefits, which are new, and the committee authorities now issuing new recommendations. This is what has happened in Sweden the last couple of months. Reality is striking back. So what I would suggest is that the Pride movement is in all nations. I would suggest that this should be brought up for debate. Not the expressions, not the flames, but the content. What is actually promoted and presented in this event? Is this good for society? Not just for Christian society, but to any society, also a very secular society. So when the stones cry out, like the people did in the TV program in Sweden, saying that this has injured us badly, we join them instead of being so scared that we will not be accepted by secular society, because I believe and hope that reality will catch up. And when the stones cry out, we should join them, because they need us. And of course, finally, Christ is our example in life, in society, in everything we do. We should follow his example and love people. We should combat ideologies that are destructive, but we should always love people, because people are always people. And we should defend truth and humility and justice. And by that, I think I conclude. Thanks.